950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Matt McNeil here. You know, one of the things which I think sometimes people kind of question, how did Minnesota become so synonymous with medicine, medical breakthroughs, quality health care? And while there's complications there, it's not a very quick answer there. One of the main reasons was the leadership of Owen Wangenstein, the doctor over at the University of Minnesota. And under his tenure, the University of Minnesota, well, as well as medicine in Minnesota as a whole, really came to the forefront as the medicine, with the direction that medicine was going in this country. Henry Buchwald is kind enough to join us. He is the author of the book Surgical Renaissance in the Heartland, a memoir of the Wangenstein era. And he's kind enough today to join us to talk about this book. Henry, thank you very much for the time.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
First of all, let's go back in history a little bit here. How did you get to the University of Minnesota?
Well, I came here straight from the Air Force in 1960 because I always had the dream that there must be a surgical program where the surgeon is an educator, is more than a technician, is a researcher. And I didn't find this in the East Coast where I'd grown up. Mm-hmm. And so when I left the Air Force, and in the Air Force, I heard of the program in Minnesota. I came here, and in a personal interview, Dr. Wangenstein accepted me. And so I came here precisely September 11th, 1960, with my wife, Daisy Emily, and at that time, two-year-old daughter, Jane. And this has been our home. And so that's how I got here, actually seeking the Wangenstein program.
And by the way, thank you for your service as Air Force. I was U.S. Army, so thank you very much, sir. I'm presuming you were a surgeon in the Air Force. I know the people that did medicine in the Army. It probably was, you know, it was very kind of cookie cutter, kind of pushing through people through. And you really had an idea of, I want to be in that research and development and the next stage level of medicine.
Right. And you say I was a surgeon in the Air Force. I was a flight surgeon in the Strategic Air Command, which today is the Strategic Services with the SEALs, the Rangers, and so on. I didn't do much surgery. A flight surgeon's duties are sort of to be up in the air with the Air Force people. And it was a good 2 years, and I'm very proud of that time period. Well, anyway, I came here, and I think we can look at this book that I wrote as a book of stories. It's my story, and it's the story of my family. It's a story of my colleagues. And sometimes they're very funny stories. Sometimes they're not so funny and maybe sad. But it's mostly the story of an era. It's the Wangenstein era. It's a time period that in a short 10, 20 years, and the book continues after Wangenstein's retirement in 1970s, early 70s, it tells the story of these people, and time doesn't allow us to go over all of them, but this was where the therapy for bowel obstruction started that used to kill 40% of people who were so afflicted. This is where open heart surgery started, and open heart surgery throughout the whole world is dependent upon the progress made here. This is where, in terms of open heart surgery, heart transplantation started. Mm-hmm. This is where transplant surgery reached its zenith. This is the story of surgery for high cholesterol levels. And today, the maybe one of the most common procedures done in the entire world is metabolic bariatric surgery for obesity. Mm-hmm. And this started in this institution. So it was an unusual time period based on the spirit of this man who not only had his faculty, and his faculty all came out of his residency, He transformed the teaching of surgery in the United States and possibly the world.
Well,
because he taught that the surgeon was not only a technician, but could be a thinker, could be a doer as well as a thinker, take care of the entire patient, do research. He put the surgeon in the limelight.
Let's talk a little bit more about Dr. Owen Wangenstein, because one of the things that I find to be interesting is that there's a lot of medical schools across the country, and there definitively seems to have been something there. I think it was, you know, Wangenstein's, you know, drive, his direction, as well as also I think he had a very supportive University of Minnesota that was going along with it, because to be able to get to the point, I mean, I think we would have better medical, I mean, I'm not saying that medical schools aren't good, but I'm saying that as that time was, it truly was a, you know, world of wonder that was being discovered at the University of Minnesota. And I'd like to get your thoughts on what exactly caused that era to be able to be so good. Was it Wangenstein himself? Was it the support of the rest of the school? What did you see?
Well, it was Wangenstein who believed in, if you had a thought, take it to the laboratory, see if it works. If it works in the laboratory, take it to the clinic, see if it works. You have a thought, take it to the most harshest critic that you know in the world and see if you can tear it apart. And then if it still works, if it's still solid, then stay with it, because the rest of the world is going to oppose it in the beginning. Essentially, every major thing that came out of Minnesota, starting with the Wangenstein treatment for bowel obstruction, open heart surgery, bariatric or obesity surgery, everything was opposed by the status quo. And if you're going to, so what's the first thing of a, let's say, a Wangenstein principle?
Mm-hmm.
Be original, follow your thoughts, and investigate, be a scientist. That's why the surgeon had to be a scientist and a researcher. He couldn't just spout ideas. You had to follow them through and make them reality. And then you had to have perseverance, because that's a long history. You can go back to surgeons from hundreds of years ago, people who try to get people to wash their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Lister and Semmelweis. Nobody listened to them. They drove them out of their professions.
It's funny because you mentioned that. I was reading a book on James Garfield, the President James Garfield, and he went to the World's Fair and the exposition, and he said one of the big things was there's a medical guy here saying, just clean your operating studio and wash your hands and do this, and you're going to actually have a lot more success. Rejected by a lot of his peers at the time. But yeah, sometimes it's just something so simple that you can, you know, you can advance medicine with something of that nature.
Yeah, it's let me give you a very cute little story.
Sure.
Wangenstein grew up as a farmer's son, and he had a herd. His father had a herd of pigs, and they couldn't farrow their young. And the vet said, "Let nature take its course." In other words, let them die, or hit them over the head. And Wangenstein didn't like that idea, and he took 3 weeks off from school, and he delivered, I think, 200 or 300 piglets. And at that point, his father, who was a great influence on him, said, become a surgeon, become a doctor. And that changed his life. He didn't accept the fact that all you can do is hit him on the head. There must be something better that one can do for people, even pigs who are in trouble.
You yourself, let's talk a little bit about what your role was in the university at this point. You come on in, and Henry Buckwall joining us, Surgical Renaissance in the Heartland is the book. What research were you really involved in at your time there at the university?
Well, I went into several directions. The first direction I went into was cholesterol metabolism, and came up with an operation as early as 1962. To lower cholesterol, and it was the intervention modality in the so-called POSH trial, a $60 million NIH-funded trial that was the first in the nation to show that cholesterol lowering prevented heart attacks, progression of peripheral vascular disease, and increased life expectancy. So that was one of my main research endeavors, was in cholesterol. I then very much deviated into bariatric or obesity surgery, and that has been my current life until this time. And converting that thought into what is metabolic surgery. About 80% of all diseases are metabolic. Even cancer is metabolic. Unless you get hit by a car, it's more or less metabolic. And so I'm working with the American College of Surgeons at this time to try to have people understand what metabolic surgery is and how it can contribute to the care of people. And then somehow I got interested in engineering as well, and started the biomedical with four others, the biomedical engineering faculty. And now it's a huge biomedical engineering department.
Yeah.
And we've come up with about, 20 or so inventions, patented inventions, including the first implantable infusion pumps, two-way catheters, and other devices. So my work has been in cholesterol, obesity, inventions, mechanical inventions. It's been fun. Above all, I felt what you have to have is joy in the process. You have to enjoy every day what you're doing, and I certainly have in my life.
What's amazing about what you just described is that it's, because technology comes and goes, and I'm always amazed when someone in medicine takes some level of technology and applies it in a new way and makes something work even better or makes people healthier. For you, what you're describing is not only are you an expert surgeon, award-winning, numerous honors, but you also have to be one heck of an engineer, which is pretty amazing. That's a good combo. That's a 1-2 punch right there. And the fact that you actually have that level of knowledge of engineering is this is the reason why I think you get success, is because, you have someone truly who's incredibly intelligent as yourself.
Well, thank you. You said surgery. Well, maybe in my life I've done 10,000 operations, hopefully made the lives of some Minnesotans better. And you want to know the heart of my life, besides my family, which is the heart of my life, it's the operating room. I am still, you say, an engineer, researcher. I'm a surgeon. Mm-hmm. I basically feel my contribution has been as a surgeon. Hope I've been a good surgeon.
Where do you consider, and from your perspective, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask this, I mean, Minnesota still is known as one of the great medical places on the planet. Mayo Clinic, of course, the hospital systems, University of Minnesota. Where do you feel is that at today? Do you feel as if it's still making the strides that you were able to make into the Wongestine era?
Unfortunately, no. I don't think it's still making those strides. And a lot of medicine is no longer making those strides because I think there's a lot of emphasis today on making money and making we need to generate money. Because research monies are down. We need to generate money for research. I don't know. That's a very tough question to answer. It is my hope that there'll be another Wongestine era. It is my hope not only, well, let me put it this way. It was Wongestine's hope that his teaching program, his residency, his way of doing things would now spring up everywhere. And that we would have further development. I mean, certainly we face the challenge right now with the COVID-19. And I think that, yes, we will lick this. We will get a vaccine. Mm-hmm. We will get a drug. We will get something. And I think we will have another era. I mean, it isn't something that happened once and will not happen again.
Yeah, we just have to remind ourselves that profit margins aren't the only thing that is important in medicine.
No, I don't think the profit margins are so important. But today, I think there is less free thinking and less independence. There's more running of medicine by an administration rather than the healthcare workers themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that might change.
I hope it does, because, I mean, it really is understating the advances that were made in Minnesota in the Wallenstein era, and which we all, as you just described your resume, basically all the things that you've been working on, how many, it's more than just the surgeries that you've done, it's how many people as well have been able to benefit from your knowledge being passed on to others. It truly is remarkable, and it's an absolute privilege to get to chat to you with you about this stuff.
Well, thank you. And let me just say one more word.
Okay.
Right now, who is out there? Who is risking their lives? It is the healthcare workers, not only surgeons, it's the nurses, it's everybody out there. These are the people who are out there trying to make people live and help America have health. This is the future. It's the healthcare people. It's the surgeons. It's others. I'd like to praise them all over the country for what they're doing. And the praise should be now. These are the people who are trying to keep America alive.
Henry Buchwald, and by the way, one thing that Henry wants to make sure we also do include here is he wants to salute everyone at the University of Minnesota who is currently working on the COVID-19 response. People are risking their lives, not only at the University of Minnesota, but the Bethesda facility at other hospitals as well, trying to save people with COVID-19. Henry wants to make sure we give a big salute to all those people, all the medical professionals working out there. Thank you very much. The book, once again, Henry Buchwald, Surgical Renaissance, Henry Buchwald, Surgical Renaissance in the Heartland, a memoir of the Wallenstein era. That is the book. Thank you very much to Henry. Matt McNeil right here on AM 950.